have the rest of the building, you might say it that way. All right, now you have manual switches, there are three position switches, and so labeled, air labeled, occupied, automatic, unoccupied. The most, just like everything else, the most happy circumstance is to leave them all on automatic and let the building clock dictate what you're gonna do. The optimum economy can be used by manually putting certain zones on unoccupied when they are not used. For instance, if you could know for sure that the gym will not be used all day today, it would be very economical to put that on unoccupied all day today.
Should we at night say that this building closes at 10 o'clock? Should somebody go down there at 10 o'clock and put all of our switches on unoccupied?
No.
Not if you're automatic.
Not on automatic. Now, the clock setting is going to determine that.
I don't know what
the clock set point is, because I mean, in a building, let's face it, a building like this is going to be a little bit hard to set that one clock is going to say, I'm going to program this whole building exactly when people come and go.
But for example, if we know that the auditorium is not going to be used for 3 days in a row,
it should be put on unoccupied.
That's it. Okay.
All right.
But if it's used.
But I think it's foolhardy to say that I'm not going to use the gym between 2 and 5 to put it unoccupied and real quick run back at 4:30 and put it on. It's foolhardy.
Well,
you're not saving that much.
If you have your auditorium set to go off by a clock, say at 10, and if you want it on to 11 or 12, you put it on
occupied.
That disregards the clock.
And that only takes the auditorium. The rest of the building now goes off at 10 o'clock. Everything else is down.
The clock will determine anything that's been on automatic will still go off by the clock.
Right.
If you want heat on while everything's off, you put it on occupied.
Right.
If you want it off when everything else is on, you put it on unoccupied. That's simple enough.
Yep.
Now, what relationship is there between the panel switches and the
this is the main heating system. The main heating pump we're now looking at.
This pump here runs continuously. This is the main circulation for the heat for the entire heating system of this building. This is the main source of heat. Without this pump,
have handled the occupied, unoccupied from the very beginning, so we've had 9 months of experience with it. I think we understand more or less what happens in that area. We handle the air conditioning with a modest degree of success because we listened to instructions.
Oh, come on, Mike, we didn't have success on the air.
Internal strike.
What was my question?
The auditorium control with the occupied and unoccupied.
Yeah, what relationship is there for in the auditorium? For example, if you turn off the panel for the auditorium from occupied to unoccupied, will that tend to cool the auditorium?
It'll leave it at 60 degrees.
It'll leave it at 60 degrees.
And when I say leave it at 60 degrees, obviously you don't get a big gust of cold air that comes in and says, plum, you're now 60
it'll
degrees.
It'll crawl
down. Presented to you in a way of a control system, is the optimum that you can achieve out of this building in the way of economy. How you operate it determines how close to the optimum you get.
Right.
To me, it's foolhardy to shut a gymnasium down for 2 hours and then have people suffering for a half an hour while it heats back up again, because you're presenting something to the public that's a facility that clock can predict your operations. I'm being redundant now. So the switches, and I think in terms of 10-hour periods as a minimum. If you're going to change a switch from the occupied to the unoccupied, think in terms of a 10-hour optimum period in order to get any benefit out of it.
Yeah.
Now.
Otherwise, leave it on automatic.
Yeah, like the gym. If it's not going to be used for 4 hours, don't bother to put it on unoccupied. Leave it alone. The optimum saving comes in about a 10-hour period. and that some engineers would question that, it's a ballpark time. And never mind the 10 hours. If I want to use the gym for an hour on a Sunday afternoon, which is not what the clock programmed it for, then I better get that thing on maybe an hour or two. It depends. If it's nice outside, why worry about it? You put it on when it's ready. If it's zero outside, you want to put the gym on maybe an hour or two before it's going to be. I mean,
okay.
I can't tell you how long it's going to take to heat that gym up from 60 to 74 or whatever the temperature is. I can't tell you that amount of time. That's going to come from experience.
Well, we have another reason for keeping these areas automatic, because it should be brought to a certain room temperature and time for program at 9 o'clock.
Well, that's what it's
optimum operation, optimum economy. But some people can tend to go silly about trying to get the last nickel out of it, and it isn't there. They're throwing money away. They're throwing away dollars trying to save a nickel. But an intelligent usage of the switches, I think, with the clock.
Okay, we understand that.
Okay, now we get the heating cooling changeover. Heating cooling changeover, I've got to explain a reason why we have heating cooling changeover. Predominantly in the classrooms, and I've got a schedule here. Because they're all by numbers off the plan. Again, these are rooms that have both heating and cooling air conditioning system. You cannot have heating and cooling at the same time. You have either heating or you have cooling. This is accomplished by the heating-cooling changeover. Now, when you change the system to heating, physically, what has happened in the boiler room, through a fantastic display of knowledge on our part, has caused you to have hot water at these units. When you throw the switch to cooling, you have chill water at these units. Going back to the discussion I had on normally open and normally closed, but on the units, they have face and bypass, and they also have valves. Face and bypass dampers are merely, here's a cooling coil, and I have a damper on top of it, and I have another one alongside of it. If I want cold, if there's chill water here and I want cooling, I'll open this damper and correspondingly close this other one, the bypass, and now all the air goes across the coil, and I now have full cooling. If I want to cut back on the cooling, I start to close this and open the bypass. Now half the air is missing the coil and half of it's going across it to the extreme where it's all bypass. That's what we call face and bypass control. The other type of control is valve control, where we actually control the physical quantity of water that's going through the coil. If we want more cooling, we put more chill water through the coil. If we want less cooling, we put less through. All right, now this is what's physically happening out in the unit. The same thing is also happening on heating. If we want more heat, we put more water through. If we want less heat, we put less water through, or we phase and bypass more or less. All right? In addition then, on a rising temperature, on the heating cycle, I want to close the valve. Everybody understand that?
Say that again, I was...
On a rising temperature, and I'm going to talk about the valve, not the face and bypass, because the face and bypass will only tend to add confusion. On a rising temperature, on the heating cycle, I'm going to close the valve. Make sense? We're going to shut off the heat.
Right.
And converse is true. Now let's take cooling. On a rising temperature and cooling, I am not going to shut off the valve. I want more chill water, so I will open the valve. What I'm trying to impress upon you there, gentlemen, is that when you, on heating, the thermostat works in one direction. When you're on cooling, it works in another direction. On a rising
valve.
But physically, the thermostats themselves are integrated with the heating-cooling changeover so that the thermostat physically operates before the appropriate season as determined by the main switch. I'm telling you this because if you happen to start reading the air gauges and you're looking at 0 and 20, the valve is either opening or it isn't closing because the temperature's going up, and that's very confusing. But basically, the thermostat is changing the way it operates from back here. Point is, to you, the room thermostat, regardless of all that hummy-jub, it's set for 74 degrees. It is 74. I don't care whether it's heating or cooling. Now, if it's set for 74 and a room is 80, the only thing that can be possibly wrong other than a malfunction is to make sure that we're on the cooling cycle. Obviously, I can't maintain 74 when it's 78 outside and I got hot water in the coil. All right? So, when we use this switch, it is a two-position switch. It is labeled heating, cooling. It says heating 0 pounds. It says cooling 20 pounds. Adjacent to the switch, you'll see a switch and you'll see a gauge and it'll say that, heating 0, cooling 20. Throw the switch to heating and it will read 0 pounds. Throw it to cooling and it will read 20 pounds. And the gauge is right next to it. Or maybe it's on top of it, but
right on top of it.
Within 3 inches or so of the switch. Now, what physically happens there is, first of all, it indexes the thermostats to whatever action they should be. We use the word index, meaning we change. Actually, this in one of these thermostats, for your edification, there is two elements. Actually, the same, we talk bimetallic elements. Mm-hmm. A bimetallic element is two dissimilar metals that work in a... Nobody knows anything, right? I have to tell you this. You're cramping my style here. Get this guy out of here. Mm-hmm. On a rising temperature, one element will expand at a greater rate than the other element, and the thing will tend to move in this direction. Now, its relation to the thermostat then is creating the change in the air pressure that's making the whole thing work. Now, if I take another one like this on a rising temperature, they're going to be doing this. But obviously, if they're working on the same thermostat on a rising temperature, this is closing off and this is opening up. If you picture an air jet behind here. So physically, this heating cooling thermostat is two thermostats, two elements that do this. All right?
You index one or the other.
You don't do a thing. Yeah, you throw the switch. It happens here by air pressure with a little cam. All right? Now, when we throw over, let's go to heat because that's easier. When we throw to heat, there are certain valves in the hot water supply and the hot water return to and from the boiler, which puts the water temperature back under what Mr. Mitchell was describing with his 18 thingamabobs or whatever it is, and the induced fan working and all that. But the water coming out now is the water that he's producing and is going out to this system. In the meantime, we also close two valves that are going to your chiller. So no water now goes through your chiller. All right?
That's automatic, too?
All this happens automatically.
There's no need to turn the chiller off.
That's correct.
During wintertime operation, I think exactly what it takes is to
turn it off.
Whenever you pick a day where you think it's not going to be, go rise above, let's say, 40 degrees, you may have a period of short cycle of compression.
The refrigeration man should explain the operation of the chiller. He may have done so, but he should explain it one way or another. Refrigeration man just left.
Yeah.
If I'm wrong, correct me. The system is set up to be on what they call a pump down cycle. A pump down cycle means the freon in the thing, the compressor pumps it up and gets it out of the crankcase or wherever the hell it is and so forth and so on. And if one of the little solenoids that shuts off, if it tends to leak a certain amount of freon in, the compressor, even though it's de-energized, theoretically to all the practical intents and purposes, it's de-energized, a little leaking freon into the crankcase, it pumps it up and gets rid of it. This is called a pump down cycle. Now what he's saying, once you're finished with the machine for the year, physically just de-energize it and kill it. Is that about right? But under normal conditions, like when you get into spring, when you're throwing over to heating today and cooling tomorrow, you just leave everything alone. But when it hits December the 1st or something like that, we're into the cold weather, and all right, from now on, we're not going to need it.
We shut off even earlier. Larry told us to shut off way back.
Well, I'm thinking this past year, boy, I'll tell you, it was warm almost up to Christmas. I had a couple of heating jobs, and it was driving me nuts because I couldn't get cold weather out.
Is our system such that we could have cooling one day and then the next day have heat?
Yeah. It's possible, yes.
It's automatic.
How many hours?
No, it isn't.
It's not automatic. You have to turn the switch.
Well, I'm in the middle of that. I'm in the middle of that right now.
Right now.
Let's keep a pension because it's even more cooler now.
Okay.
I'm in the middle right now. Now, I've said that when you throw the switch to heating, certain valves open to hot water, certain valves close to the refrigeration, and the refrigeration compressor is de-energized. And when I say de-energize, I have to have tongue-in-cheek because it is under this pump-down cycle, okay? In other words, physically it will shut off, and you can sit there, and in 15 minutes it may come on and run for 5 or 10 seconds,
you actually
and then shut off.
To manually move the switch.
The end of the season, yeah.
No,
right.
No, we're talking about...
The switch, yes, the
switch
heating
itself,
cooling switch.
Heating
you
cooling.
Physically
the
turn it to...
change the cycle, you have to actually
you
move
turn it
switch.
To heating, all right? Physically, that's what we're describing, because cooling is a little bit different. I've turned it to heating, I've opened two valves to the hot water supply and return, I've closed the chill water, and I've de-energized the refrigeration. All right?
And the compressor is still there, it's still on in case you need to turn it to cooling.
Right. All right. Now, I have hot water going out through the building, which is indoor-outdoor control, as Mr. Mitchell has capably explained. And you decide now it's hot again. This is in the spring. You're going to get this back and forth. How much you do this is going to be your own opinion. There's certain drawbacks to this type of system because there's this hot water going through the system and it takes a while for the hot water to get out and then to have the system replaced in turn with chill water. The chiller has to come on. It has to chill the water back down again. And now you start circulating it, and by the time you're through the switch, it may be an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours before you actually get the result, and by that time the damn sun's gone down or whether you want to go back on a heat again. I mean, this is when you get into the spring, this type of system, perfectly blunt, could drive you nuts. And if you're gonna try and throw this system every hour, every half hour, every 2 hours,
change it.
You'll be chasing your tail and you'll never catch it.
Yeah.
So our attitude at this point should be.
Well, I'm going to try and give you one guide, the best guide in the spring. I'm talking the spring, possibly the fall, when you're in the in-between period. The best guide you have is the Weather Bureau. In other words, if the temperature is going to be expected to be up into the 75 today, then you better sometime in the morning, you better go and put the system on cooling. The individual room thermostats will shut off the chill water to keep the room from subcooling. You just don't have any heat available. Now, there's always a screwy day when we have a front pass through and the temperature rises or drops by 30 or 40 degrees in a matter of a half an hour. And there's no way in the world you're going to keep up with it. But you've got to use a little judgment. I'd suggest don't change over more than once a day.
Oh, that's great. I didn't even think we could go that fast.
Changing days.
Yeah.
There may be 10 days.
Yeah, but I'm saying, and I think you should determine
when you need to.
Well, in other words, we have the cable of some apartment buildings, for example. October 1st, no matter what happens, that's when they turn the heat on. You can't have heat on it. May we at least could have a week of heat.
That
we could have a week of cool.
That has
and then
to do.
Back to
that
week
has
of heat.
Some of these
we
things have to do with an off
yeah.
off off rate.
We had that
meter.
Last year. We had a day of heat, a day of cooling. We
right,
turned
good.
It back and forth.
These things that you're talking about can involve electrical consumption, electrical power, because you get a better rate for cooling or this or that. If you have a combination of heating, electric heat, and cooling, you can get a better rate and this and that. And if you change it over on May 1st, the man has to come read the meter because you're on a different rate. There's all these screwy things. physically, your only limitation is the mechanical system.
Right.
And when I get through with the cooling, you're going to see a little bit of why I'm talking about what I'm saying. When you index the system to cooling, first of all, and what I say for cooling is almost direct reverse for heating. Like, for instance, the chill water pump starts. The refrigeration circuit is energized. Everything is ready to run. The chiller should come on, all right? However, However, we also index the thermostats to their proper cycle. We also now close the hot water valves and open the chill water valves. Okay?
Right.
However, with hot water in the system, if we did exactly what I said, if we did that right at that moment in time, we would take hot water, and now since we closed the boilers and opened the chill water, we would now take hot water into the chiller. Between the freon and so forth in the chiller, there are certain seals, and they are susceptible to higher temperatures. And if you burst the seal, you will lose a freon charge, and freon is extremely expensive, depending upon the size of your chiller. I mean, we talk thousands of dollars. All right. So obviously we have something then that would preclude that from happening. We have what we call a limit. In this case, it's a high limit controller, which is in the return water line, which says I will not open the two valves going to the chiller, the supply or return valve, and allow water to go to the chiller until such time as the water drops below 90 degrees, I believe. Set at 90 degrees.
It's all computerized, in other words.
Well, we just use the word
machine. No, I mean the machine won't move.
Nothing's going to happen. Nothing's physically
going to happen, right?
Nothing's physically going to happen to damage your machine when you throw it to cooling. The thing is, when you do that, you're going to look and you say, well, the valves aren't working.
But it's working. It's just waiting for that.
Now the water out of your system. It's under his indoor-outdoor control. I don't know what it would be. If it happens to be in mild weather when you do this, the water should be prorated down already to the point where maybe it'll go right into effect. But if the water happens to be 110 degrees,
it just will not do that.
It will not happen.
Right.
Now, you may be sitting here spinning your wheels, not getting any cooling, for an hour and a half or two hours, because this air has nothing.
Actually, it's working. That's what it's supposed to be doing.
Right.
Because
you
that's
why it's too many times a day. Because every time you do, you fill the system with hot water.
Most of the time, we are over 90, right? We're over 90 degrees down there right now.
Oh, right. Sure.
No, I would imagine. Cool.
And
you
could hope so before you went that high.
No.
There's one point that has been brought out, which I'm sure people are going to get to. Although our reset schedule is set, right, at 65, it's roughly 100 degrees of water. One point which you didn't bring out, and I assume you're going to get to it, is that you can use heating and cooling simultaneously in different parts of the building.
Different zones.
You say that, but not on my changeover, I guess. You mean about the multiple zones?
Right.
Oh, all right, excuse me. Yeah, I haven't got that far yet.
No, we found that.
I thought you meant you would use it simultaneously.
No. I meant you may have cooling on
the same system.
What Larry's bringing out, and I hadn't got that far, is because I wanted to explain the heating cooling changeover as if it was unity. Actually, it is four.
Four different zones.
There are four zones. Now this gives you the flexibility so that the sunny side of the building can be on cooling and the north side or the cold side can be on heating simultaneously.
If you need it.
You have that much flexibility. You have four. You could have one zone on heating and three zones on cooling or whatever. They're individual zones. Each zone will act the way I said it would, except of course for the chiller. The chiller is common to all zones. Okay.
Right.
What is helpful in having four zones? Remember, he just said that you cannot pump more than 9 feet water in that show.
Right.
So if you're using different zones at different times, when these valves change over, you're mixing partial chilled water and partial heating water, which is roughly, we'll say, 110 with the 45 degree water. So
50-60 degree water going into the chiller.
You'll be, in other words, what he said, and I don't know whether I've got to say that or not, but I should have, is that when, if one zone, the south zone, is on cooling, and the other three are on heating, you will find the other three will physically index to cooling a lot more quickly because they've got one zone of chill water that's helping to cool it back quicker.
Right.
The first zone you change over to cooling by itself is going to take forever. It's going to take forever.
Now these four zones, of course, have nothing to do with the auditorium. That's a independent cooling system, and that has nothing to do with this heat changer.
These are predominantly, I'm not sure as exclusively, but predominantly smaller classroom type units that are in under the window.
Yeah,
we've identified those zones.
But the switch on the panel that reads
I have
auditorium
to take my son to the hospital.
Does
I
activate
think
the fans and
that's the occupied unoccupied.
Yes, the occupied unoccupied. So we do have that much control from the board.
That's correct, but it has nothing to do with the changeover. Nothing to do with the changeover.
Broke his finger or his foot.
Now I think I'm running out of control diagrams.
They're going to go to lunch.
Can we stop for a minute and figure out our schedule?
This took longer than I anticipated it would to do this, but this is a good thing.
Right.
I figured I'd kill this in about a half an hour and then walk through the building, but we've taken
We've lapped over onto other problems, Mr. Keeper. We haven't, you know, just let you stay with it as you originally thought. But by relating the theory to our problems, we're already beginning to identify things we'd like you to show us when you go around the building. So what we ought to do, perhaps, is leave this lay, and then we'll have Larry. We'll
he has some of this on tape, I guess.
We'll have it all on tape.
I hope I do.
I suggest strongly some sort of a review amongst yourselves.
We'll
have Charlie here, because I think Charlie could probably.
We'll
he doesn't know what I know, but I think he knows enough that
Charlie is our consultant. So
I suggest we digest the tapes with Charlie and actually physically draw up our own notes as we interpret it. And
well, if I draw up notes, first of all, I'm awful busy to do it, but if I draw them up, I don't know that I'll be in a language that you understand anyway.
We'll understand it from the tape and our understanding.
I'd like to make right now, and I don't know that Mitchell has to be here, it's up to him.
Well, we wanted Mitchell to kind of be here to help us understand the mechanics of the equipment that feeds into your system. You know.
Well, I want to make it for 2 weeks, like in March. Only because I'm fairly well scheduled next week.
The trouble is, are we going to still have enough heating problems? We have heating problems.
You don't need heating problems to get an instruction. You can have no problems in the building to get
instruction. Well, how do we get our problems solved at this point?
We
now
have
to talk to Mitchell.
So, Mitchell, you have a problem,
okay.
And you take care of it. It has nothing to do with what I'm doing here.
No, yours is an instruction.
No,
okay.
You
no relation.
You want to postpone this for the day?
Yeah, we're suggesting.
I think we ought to take care of our problems with you today.
Well,
problems I don't want to postpone.
I have the list.
Yeah.
Of all the rooms that we think we have a problem.
He has a list and he'll have his man go around.
I don't have a toolkit, I don't have a mechanic,
no,
I have nothing
mean,
to, yeah. I can't do anything.
Larry will send his man.